Yeah. Listen up. Yeah, I can see you're new to this. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no experience. You're entry level. You ain't got no qualifications, baby. You're entry level. You're entry level. Your entry level, baby. Your entry level. Ooh, yeah.
Entry level. Welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I'm here with my old roommate, my friend, the co-writer and star of the hit Hollywood movie, The Civil Dead, Wimmer Thomas.
Thank you for having me, Brooks. And thanks for saying that nice stuff.
Well, no, it's great. Like, I still have not seen The Civil Dead all the way through. I'm waiting to go see it in the theaters. Summer and I are going to go see it this week.
Okay.
It's in a lot of theaters across America right now, which is very cool.
Awesome.
And it's like one of those things where you guys like spent like $30,000 to make it.
Yeah.
And you've already like made your money back and everyone's like, that never happens ever in movies.
Yeah. It was like, I can't believe that part of it. I mean, because we didn't have any sort of expectation. It felt like we were making a short film, you know? So it was like, it's been really, and we didn't get into any of them fancy festivals or nothing, so.
Yeah, you guys just like won Slam Dance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was all, well, Slam Dance is really cool, but it's not known for its marketplace.
Right. Will you explain Slam Dance versus Sundance?
Slam Dance is often like, the festival where Sundance, it happens at the same time as Sundance. It's usually the not movie star movie festival.
Mm-hmm.
So Sundance is the one with all the Chris Pratt movies or whatever.
Yeah.
Slam Dance will have like the interesting movie about a couple knuckleheads or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you guys made it for like 30 grand.
Yeah.
And then you made your money back.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's awesome.
So now you get to do another one.
No.
No?
Do you think that's how it works?
That's not how it works?
No, we're trying.
Because I was pitching to Summer. Summer and I are going to go see it in the theater this week. And one of my favorite movies to watch in the world whenever I'm feeling down and out is The Puffy Chair, which the Duplass brothers made for $5,000 in like, what, 2002?
Yeah, something like that.
But like, that is, I don't know, inflation, $30,000. So I'm like, we got to go see the new Puffy Chair written and starring my old roommate.
Yeah.
So I'm like stoked to go see it, but I want to wait for the theater.
Thanks, pal. Yeah, that'd be awesome if you saw it in the theater.
No, I'm going to go see it in the theater. I was going to come to, where was it? In
Limley?
Limley?
Or Lamley, I don't know. Lamley.
But I was going to come Thursday to watch it because you guys were doing a cool Q&A after. But I did this show, and I'm excited to tell you about this show, where it was the Party Down premiere, and they did it at the Laugh Factory, and the whole idea was, we're going to have Ken Marino as his character, Ron, catering during the stand-up show. And I was like, well, there could be a few wrinkles, but I'll do it.
Yeah.
And they booked, seems like Stars, who has Party Down, booked two comedians, me and Wang, who is very funny. And then they let the Laugh Factory book the rest of the comics. And they were problematic.
Oh, yeah.
So
like, why the Laugh? Why would they pick the Laugh Factory?
I don't know, man. There was a lot of mistakes, but that, you know, like the people at Stars were like, you got to light this guy. He's doing a long pronouns bit.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And then he's like, I know the owner. And I'm like, oh my God, this is fucking crazy. Like, it was like, it literally was like Party Down, the TV show cast actually did put this on.
Yeah.
Cause it was just scary.
Damn. But it was worth it then for that reason.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And I had fun. And Ken Marino is like one of my favorite actors. But like, I did see an old man yelling cause they lit him early. You don't tell me what to say on stage.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Jesus. Sometimes I think it would be interesting just to fully immerse myself in that world for like 1 year and see how it changes me, or if I could stay how I, because you know when you get used so used to performing in those kinds of clubs, you start to like, at least I do, I want people to laugh at me, so I start to change all my material to be like the dumbest
right
bullshit.
Ian Bagg said a really nice thing one time, and then we'll get back to the Civil Dead, which was I was at the Laugh Factory, and the guy going up before me was so bad, and the crowd was loving him so much that it made me mad at the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up furious at the crowd. It was just like, you guys want fucking trash.
Yeah.
And Ian Bagg like was very nice, and he was like, hey man, you can't watch the comedians who go up before you here. It'll turn you sour.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's great advice.
Yeah. Because I think I've had great sets at those kinds of clubs, but it's only been with my friends who are hosting a show. Mm-hmm. Every time I'm on one of those showcase shows, it's like, okay, got to do Blink-182 impression. Or like I did a festival in Vegas and I just was eating shit.
Well,
and I started doing all of the old like, what, like basically was doing 1992 Kevin Pollak stand up. Like, what if Jack Nicholson talked to William Shatner by the end of the festival?
Well, okay, but I do want to talk about Civil Dead because you guys made that a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's in a lot of places. I'm like excited for you guys.
It's a trip. They keep, so originally we were just going to be in the five big city Alamo Drafthouse theaters. And then something happened where now they've opened it up to all of these other markets. And so it's actually, I could legit say if you like movies, you could go to thecivildead.com and maybe find it near you. Like it's playing in Mobile, Alabama.
That's incredible.
So it's playing in very small towns.
That's awesome. And like, how did Civil Dead, like, can you give people a quick, like, little elevator pitch to, so they can go?
What it is.
Now available, you can stream it.
Yeah, so the movie is, let me tell you the pitch Clay gave to me whenever he pitched me the idea, which is, I have an idea for a movie. It's mostly just us. It opens with a couple hearing a noise in the attic. It turns out that's a ghost, and I'm the only, Clay is the only person who can see me, the ghost. I play the ghost. And I can't do any ghost tricks, and I'm mostly just annoying. And Clay doesn't want any friends. So the guy being haunted doesn't he doesn't want to be haunted, but he also doesn't want to have friends. And so it's about him sort of learning how to be a friend, but through a ghost story.
I will say, as someone who hasn't seen it yet, that sounds like Clay's real life.
go check out Clay Tatum. Yeah, that's what
Your best friend and my old roommate, who I would just like watch play video games. He'd be like, I don't know why you're in here watching me play video games.
Well, that's like the rule of Clay's friendship is you have to come to him as a friend. He's not going to come to you.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that was like what, I mean, how long ago was that? Over 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And it would be, even when everybody was like in their early mid-20s, it would still be Clay just sitting in his room and be like, well, we got to go. If we want to party, we have to go party up in Clay's room in order for him to be involved in this.
We have to party while Clay plays Skate 3.
Or like messes around on Photoshop.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like very true to life. And some interviews and stuff, people would be like, is this based on any sort of truth? And we'll be like, well, Clay's like, no. And I'm like, come on.
Also, 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't know if there's a lot of reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, but let's lean into the 100%.
I looked 20.
Okay, well, that's pretty good.
20.
That's good.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, people have been on. It's like, it's crazy to have a movie. I think it's a pretty funny movie, too, which they don't make a lot of funny movies anymore. So you should see, even if you don't think it's good, still go see it, because if this movie does well, then it means somebody who you actually think is funny could potentially get to make a low budget like comedy.
And now let's talk about like what you and I bond over the most, the golden age of comedies. Mm-hmm. The 1990s.
Yeah, this, another way to pitch this movie is it's Cable Guy, but Jim Carrey's a ghost.
Like the fucking 90s rocked so hard for comedy. It was nonstop comedy fun.
Yeah.
Now, like, if you want to see a comedy, you're like, I got to go see Ant-Man 6.
Right. That's, like, the And people are so afraid of just saying comedy. Like when critics talk about our movie, even positively, they have to say like absurdist dark comedy. And it's like, well, there's nothing. It's not absurd. There's no. It's just a comedy. It's right. like a dumb guy movie. But yeah, I mean, I wish I was older to in the 90s to experience what it was like to. I mean, we got the tail end with like Talladega Nights. What was the last one? Tropic Thunder? Was that like the last?
I think that the last. So when I was in college, Tropic Thunder came out the exact same time as fuck. It was.
Was it Iron Man?
It wasn't Superbad. No, Iron Man. No, it was Tropic Thunder, and then, Tropical Express came out at the same.
Pineapple Express. Yeah,
they came out like. Same month. Mm-hmm. And I was like, these movies are different and incredible.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's happened since then.
No. But it's not like they were. How did they just disappear, though?
I don't know. Because now, like, I actually had a meeting with, like, an exec at Universal, which makes, like, Jurassic Park.
Right.
And he was just like, it was one of those rare, cool meetings where he was like, I'm going to shoot you straight.
Yeah.
People see 4 movies a year, max, the average American. And we, you know, as an industry, have stopped trying to do individual types of movies.
Yeah.
You're going to get action, you're going to get comedy, and you're going to get love all in the same movie.
Oh, right.
A la the new Jurassic Parks, which are kind of funny. The new Marvel movies, which are kind of funny. You know, like, but there's no just like, we're going to go straight hard comedy.
Right. Or you get like Popstar was the last attempt.
Yeah. And like.
Which is great, but it just ate
it. It's like one of my favorite movies. Yeah. It didn't do great.
No, yeah.
I remember I was at. This is a fun story. I was at a Lonely Island show in Minneapolis, and the movie The Long Shot had just come out with Seth Rogen and like Charlize Theron. And. People were kind of dunking on it in the green room, and I'm just like a fly in the wall. You know, I can't, I'm in the green room with the Lonely Island right before they perform. And they're like, this movie's ate shit. And Sandberg, and this is just a, you know, what type of guy he is. He goes, it's hard to get people to see a movie. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot.
I mean, they've made 2 of the best comedies of the last 15 years and nobody
Hot
saw
Rod
them.
And Pop
Hot
Star.
Rod is the hardest I've ever laughed in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. I saw it 3 times. The first 2 times I saw it were tests because I had just moved to LA. And you remember, did you ever hang out where they would like in a place where they just handed out free screeners?
Mine was like the Nick Swartzen where he was a porn star guy.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. So I saw it in the first cut of the movie. And I've someone confirmed this who was friends with that group of people. There was a joke in it. Where they're at like a screening of the movie that his like brother makes for him about him, like a documentary, and he's so stoked on it. Andy Samberg is like, "Thanks so much for making this for me, baby brother." And he goes, "You got it any time." And Andy Samberg goes, "Seriously, I'm so excited. I want to suck your little baby brother dick." And then his little brother goes, "What?" And he goes, "Nothing. Don't tell anyone I said that." I'm pretty sure my hands, like I have a memory of my hands on the sticky floor of the theater because of how hard I was laughing. I was having to like brace myself. And then they cut that. It's like, that's the first joke to go. But anyway.
Yeah. Exactly the same for me in the Swords and Porno movie where I'm like, I can't believe they cut that.
Yeah.
So, and then McGroup. So, I remember telling like Lauren, I was like, yo, like Billy Madison and Tommy Boy are like the Hot Rod MacGruber. Mm-hmm. He was like, that's not wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, and I, cause it was like, but the only difference is like 2 of them were fucking smashes.
Yeah. People. I mean, the only movie my dad has seen in theaters since 2019 is Top Gun Maverick, which I love, but
it's like one of the best movies of all time.
Yeah, easy. But that's what people want. They want a movie star. That's what I'm saying. We don't got movie stars no more. We got Marvel guys. But people want a movie star.
Here's my pushback. The reason Top Gun 2 worked so well is because it was just a fucking movie.
Yeah.
Tommy Boy's just a movie. Yeah. Ace Ventura's just a movie. It's dumb. It's fucking never going to happen. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, I didn't have to think for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it was fun. Like, that's why I think Top Gun 2 worked so hard.
It's incredible storytelling.
Yeah.
I mean, Clay puts it like this. He's like, I've never seen a movie, an action movie or just any movie, where I knew the plan of what they had to do so well by the end that I was just going, you got to turn right. Like, no, right now you lift up. What are you doing? Yeah. At the end, the stakes are just like so perfect.
Yeah. And then now Miles Teller's in that super fun Bud Light commercial in the Super Bowl. What a likable
character.
Oh,
really? I didn't see that. I haven't seen that.
Oh, man. It was.
I didn't watch.
It's so funny.
Who are you rooting for?
Miles Teller in the
Bud Light. Yeah. Do you do. Did you ever film that joke you did about Ace Ventura? About how you're a Miami. How you're not a. Whatever. You know the joke I'm talking about.
Oh, I just put it on Instagram. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm hmm.
Oh, wow.
I did it in my half hour.
Oh, cool. Okay.
About how I'm not a Dolphins fan. I mostly like Ace Ventura.
I was telling a friend today about that joke that you used to do about when you and all your brothers first got the internet. And, like, I can't. Do you remember this joke?
Yeah. It's on my half hour tour where my oldest brother wanted to see the lyrics to Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
My middle brother wanted to see how many home runs Bo Jackson hit. And then I wanted us to go to Rugrats.com.
That's little kid Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
And you never figured out Micro Machine City, did you?
We could talk about Micro Machine City.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So, Witt's favorite joke of mine. And we should be talking about your movie that's currently in theaters. But, like, you hosted a show. And I lived with you guys, and once a week, you would let me go up
for 5 to 10 minutes.
For 5 to 10 minutes to like 12 to 15 people.
Yeah.
And
but it was called Little Kid Brooks.
But I had to tell a story about when I was little.
Yeah.
And there's this real story about how when I was little, I was very afraid of my room.
Yeah.
My brothers told me a big spider named Mike lived in my closet. Uh-huh. I was very afraid of that. And then also read this book, Real Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, yeah. About how a dog would run down the stairs at 11. So I was scared of the time 11. Just in general, the time 11 was terrifying. So, my parents knew that the time 11 was really scary to me. We still had a grandfather clock that would like chime 11.
Oh shit.
Like in a scary way.
Yeah.
So when that hit, I was like, the dog's out. You know? So I'd sleep on my parents' floor a lot.
Yeah.
And I my dad was like, you gotta stop sleeping on our floor. And I was like, well, I love sleeping on the floor, you know. and he's like, you can't sleep on the floor. And I was obsessed with Micro Machine Cities.
Which is like so specific. I feel like those only existed for like 4 months.
Yeah, no, it's exactly when I was 11.
Yeah.
I was like, I love Micro Machine Cities. But they were like $6.
Yeah.
And I had $0. So I was like, I told my parents, I sat them down and I was like, okay, guys, each night I don't sleep in your room, I get a quarter. And, you know, in my head, I'm like, okay, so then in like a month and a half, I get a Micro Machine City.
Damn.
And my dad's like, no, you just don't sleep in our room anymore. And I was like, playing hardball, Jim, I get it. And then so I was like, okay, each week I don't sleep in your room. Full week, 7 days, no sleeping in your room. That's a quarter. And he was like, you just don't sleep in our room anymore. And I was like, yeah. Yeah, because in that world, you know, it's like in 1 year I'm going to get a Micro Machine City. I was like, okay, every month, full month, that I don't sleep in your room, I get a quarter. And in 6 years, I will get a Micro Machine City. And my dad just kept being like, you just don't sleep in our room anymore.
You're forgetting my favorite part, which was when you would go to the store. I think you would start it like this. You would hide.
Yes. So I want to hear you. How
you would grab a Micro Machine City and walk around with it, and your mom or your dad would be like, "You can't get that." And so you'd go to the tie, the detergent, and go, "I'm gonna hide this behind the Tide."
No, it was even crazier. I would hide it in a vacuum cleaner.
Oh, okay.
Box. So like, and it wasn't just Micro Machine Cities.
Mm-hmm.
This is Manchester, Iowa. I'm like, I want like a Micro Machine City. My parents say I can't have it, but like, what if someone else comes and buys it before I have all my quarters? So I'd put them all in a box, the same box.
Like at a Walmart or whatever.
At a Walmart that was this like $300 vacuum that I'm like, no one will ever buy this.
Yeah.
So over 3 months, this thing is loaded with all the things I want.
If your mom's like, what do you want for Christmas? You should just say, go buy that vacuum.
No. So it's like, you know, G.I. Joe's, Ninja Turtles, Micro Machine Cities are all in this vacuum box. And I go to Walmart one day and someone bought it. That vacuum.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my treasures. They're all gone.
Yeah. I would do that. I remember being a kid. And the dream toy I wanted, I thought was called what's the green guy from Mortal Kombat? He's like the green ninja.
Reptile.
Reptile. I thought he was called Chameleon. So I would tell my mom, and my friend Scotty also thought he was called Chameleon. So we would tell our moms, all we want for Christmas is a Chameleon action figure from Mortal Kombat. And they would look for it, and we just never got one. And then like a year later, I had a friend who had it, and I was like, holy shit, you have Chameleon. And he was like, this guy's called Reptile. And I was like, what? No.
Dude, I have a Reptile story myself.
What?
My best friend, Kaylin Linz, everyone called him Yoshi. Like, Yoshi. And I was so jealous. He had a cool video game nickname. And I wanted my nickname to be Reptile. So I was like, you guys can start calling me Reptile.
Any day.
And they're like, no. And I was like, actually, it's Reptile, if anybody's interested. And no one was interested. And I like even like started being like at class, like, if everyone could call me Reptile, then everyone's like, we're not calling you Reptile. Because I love Reptile. He's very cool.
He was really cool. Underrated, I think.
Yeah, you got Sub-Zero, Scorpion, and then you got Reptile.
Yeah.
Or Chameleon.
That movie is really good. The first Mortal Kombat movie.
Really?
It really holds up. Because it's exactly all those video game movies from the 90s, the like Street Fighter, they tried to like make it be about something. Mortal Kombat was like, no, there's an island that has where people fight to the death.
I gotta see it.
It's just right there. You know, it's awesome.
Well, sounds like The Civil Dead.
It's just the same as The Civil Dead.
So people can go see Civil Dead.
They can see it in theaters or they can rent it or buy it on VOD now as of like
this will come out Monday. Well, it's come out in like 12 hours.
Oh yeah, great. Then
so check out The Civil Dead. I'm waiting to see it in theaters because I'm excited. And I can't wait. And it's gonna be fun.
Thanks, Ben.
Anything else you want to plug?
Nope.
Are you going on tour?
I'm going on tour opening for a band called Howdy. They're one of my all-time favorite bands. And I'm playing in all the places that I grew up going to see shows down in the Southeast.
Yeah, you call it the places Forrest Gump visited tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The places where Forrest Gump was shot. Savannah, Georgia, like Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah.
Those kinds of places.
Well, go check out Wit on tour. Your new album's out.
Yeah.
And listen to that and go see Wit. And I'm on tour. Come see me. I think I'm in...
What was your joke that you were making about your very poorly planned tour? This tour? Or do you already
Yeah, I'm
that?
On a very poorly planned tour right now, which is just I said yes to everything.
Yeah.
I think I'm in Montana next.
Sick.
Very sick. Whit, thanks for doing the intro.
Thanks, pal. Thanks for having me.
Check out The Civil Dead. It's great according to Rotten Tomatoes.
Thanks, pal.
And I'm going to see it in the theater this week.
Thanks, man.
But in the meantime, oh, wait. We have to introduce our guest.
Adam Newman?
Adam Newman!
Yeah.
He's a very funny comedian. You guys are going to enjoy listening to Adam spin some tales. Mm. He grew up friends with Dusty Rhodes' daughter.
Wow.
So he went to like graduation at Dusty Rhodes' house, which is the most interesting thing I've ever heard.
Damn. All right.
Do you know Dusty Rhodes?
Don't know who that is.
Oh, he's like
trying to act like he did.
He's the guy. He was like the big fat guy in like the polka dot pro wrestling. That would be like.
Oh yes.
I'll tell you what that is.
Yeah. Okay. I know this guy. I've seen pictures of this guy.
Yeah. That's cool. You should watch.
My TikTok has been really suggesting a lot of wrestling stories and things. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot about that guy, the Ultimate Warrior, yelling at somebody at an airport.
Oof.
You know this one?
No.
And then there's a whole video of Vince McMahon forcing him to apologize, and he really just doesn't want to.
Well, that's because he wouldn't, like, go to a kid's bar mitzvah.
Oh, that's why?
Yeah, he was like... a kid that was friends with someone who's friends with Vince McMahon was like, I want to meet the Ultimate Warrior. He was like, get the fuck away from me.
Yeah.
And then like Vince is like, you need to apologize to like Dustin. And he was like, Dustin, I'm really freaking sorry. I'm not sorry.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's just like truly a sketch. Because every time he goes, Dustin, I'm really sorry. God, no, I'm not. I don't want to do it.
Enjoy this interview with Adam Newman. Watch The Civil Dead and have a great freaking week. Hey, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. This is exciting. He's over. He's my friend Adam Newman.
Sorry, I went morning radio. Yeah. Laugh. Sorry about that. No, I forgot. Totally fine. I fucking forgot.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I've just road raged my way over here, so I'm trying to calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I got you on the mic right away so you could road rage it out.
Yeah. Adderall hit. Halfway over here, I yelled at it. Two Teslas.
You take Adderall? Like,
yeah,
I can't take Adderall.
Well, I can't drink coffee, but I can take amphetamines. So I don't understand how bodies work all the time. But I seriously can't. If I have like one small cup of McDonald's coffee, if I'm on the road, I'll spin out into like a 3-day panic attack.
Yeah.
But if I don't take an Adderall, I can't get out of bed.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird.
That's crazy. Because like I can drink coffee when things are going. Well,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like if I have to get up to get to work,
yeah,
you know, I'm like, cool, coffee. Cause I'm at work, you know, but if I just have a coffee and then I don't have a lot to do that day, panic attack.
Yeah. You really have full on panic attack. I mean, it spins me out into full on like clinical by definition, I'm having a panic attack. Like it spins me out like in a really weird and like the tension, the headaches and neck stuff and all that stuff. Coffee like messes me up.
Yeah, I just have to like run. I'm like, I gotta go for like a run.
Well, you know what? I should try that because that's like a healthy way to you know, get outside and maybe take care of a panic.
Well, how long? Adam's a great comic. I think we did a Comedy Central half hours at the same time. Maybe you did it the year before me.
I think I did the year before you, but I know you. We met New Faces.
Well, we did New Faces together. Yep. Yes, that's true.
Because I was like, I don't know. I didn't know that many LA people when I was in New York.
Well, let's talk about that. So we did New Faces in 2013, and it was mostly a New York-based crew. So we're talking about just Montreal Just for Laughs, New Faces, which like means everything until you get it. And then everyone should do that.
It meant everything to me. I hate saying credits or whatever, but it meant everything to me until I didn't get it 5 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And then I got Letterman like 3 months before I got Montreal. Right. And then like, you know, your managers call you and they're like, congratulations, you got it. And you're like, well, you know.
Well, that's when you're supposed to get
mad
it.
Mad when you
that's
finally
get it.
That's
when you're supposed it. To get it is when you don't. You're like, yeah, no, I should have done that a while ago.
Yeah.
So maybe they know what they're doing because like we were both very good there.
We were. Yeah.
But it was a very strong. Our New Faces class was a very strong New York contingent.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I think we had like Aparna, which you're like, what?
So my L.A. My L.A. pals were Ian Carmel, Andrew Santina, and Aparna. And Byron Bowers. And everyone else was New York.
Yeah, we had Sean Donnelly, Alice Wetterland. I'm trying to remember who. That's funny that you said Aparna, because I knew Aparna was back and forth.
DiStefano, was DiStefano with us? Andrew Schultz was.
Andrew Schultz was in our New Faces?
I think so. Pete Davidson was. It was like a group of like a little New York versus L.A., and like by the end we're like, I just kind of like all you guys.
Dude, I met so many LA people. I hadn't really made my like trips out to LA yet. So I met so many LA people and I just went back being like, I don't know why everybody shits on the LA comedians. Like, because I think New York, the only snobby thing we really have is we can get up more. Like, that's really it. We can get up more. But I was like, everyone I met out there was super nice. I don't think he was a new face, but I think I met Jake Wiseman that year. And like, it was weird because people had said I stole a bit from him because I had found cocaine in a heckler's coat. Like, a week after he found cocaine on a heckler, and like the clip went viral, and they were like, "You stole this bit from." I did not steal it. And I met him, and I was like, "Hey, man, I just wanted to let you know." And he just went like, "I know," and hugged me, and I was like, "This guy's great."
Yeah,
I haven't seen him in 5 years. I have no idea what what he's up to.
Sure, yeah, I should have him on the podcast. He made the show Corporate, which was great.
Well, I knew that. Yeah.
But yeah, it just was a fun group. Kevin Barnett was out there, but he'd already done New Faces, so he was just hanging. That was like Montreal. I don't know about it. I've been back twice. It's just like comedy summer camp where like at the end of the night, you're like, oh, I forgot I got to do a set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went back two or three times. And I remember one time, like last minute, running into like Marc Maron in an elevator, and he was like, what are you doing? It's 9:30 tonight. And I was like, I got 7:30 and I got nothing else. He's like, you're opening for me. And I was like,
that's fun.
All right. And I was, by the time it was like the last day of the festival, they keep you up with just like, you know, it's just like free booze, weed, barbecue at 9 o'clock in the morning, food trucks and whatever. And I just remember like, I froze in the middle of a joke opening for him and had like, if there was any set to have a meltdown for, it would be opening for Marc Maron. Cause they're like, oh yeah, well, you know, similar act or whatever. Yeah. It went great. And it was fun.
That's very whatever. Fun. Yeah.
I was intimidated by Maron too, but I found, you know, I found most comedians, if you find something not comedy, to talk to them. We talked about guitars and cigars, and I was like, he seemed like a nice guy to me.
You talked about cigars with Marc Maron?
Yeah, I was in a cigar. Well, because this was before.
What? You that sounds like get... the worst conversation I've ever heard.
Well, I went through a weird cigar phase. I don't remember why. I'll get like obsessed with like YouTube channels, and for some reason I was obsessed with like dudes smoking cigars in their backyards, like away from their wives, like reviewing cigars, and I got into them. And in Canada, you could still get Cuban cigars, but you couldn't get them in the United States yet.
I mean, that's already like a sketch, like a guy reviewing stuff, just hiding from his wife.
Yeah.
This one's pretty good.
Notes of coffee and chocolate and not my wife, Yeah, I mean, that's why I got a motorcycle. That's when I got into, I always get like obsessed with YouTube channels and then have to like buy the thing. They're like kind of midlife crises, I guess. But
sure.
I don't know.
Well, incredible. Well, that suffices to say, we've known each other a decade. We met there. It was fun. And now we're friends out here. You're a great comedian. Let's give a little shout out to both of our new favorite comic, Willie Simon.
Yeah, sure. I literally just saw you post a story that he was opening for you the other night. And I was like, oh, because I don't know. I literally just met him. I was playing music with some dudes. And I think they were like, he plays guitar, but he'll play bass because we have enough guitar players. Mm-hmm. And this dude's like ripping Primus and stuff. And I'm like, this guy's awesome. And he was super nice.
Yeah.
So followed him on Instagram. And like two or three of his jokes popped into my feed. And I'm like, this kid is hilarious.
No, me and Willie, as soon as this is over, are headed back down to Irvine to do more shows at the Irvine Improv tonight. We only did one last night, but it sold out. I've never sold out the Irvine Improv.
That's great.
Incredible. Thanks to everybody who came out.
It's a huge venue. It's a huge...
550.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, I'm like, holy shit. Like, because they started posting clips on Instagram, you get the gig.
I don't know where you're at on it. I'm starting a thing. I think I'm going to post it Monday. I need to edit it. I've never had like a lot of social media followers on anything. Mm-hmm. I had like 8,000 followers. And then like, I don't know, 8 months ago, I started posting clips like almost every day. And it went to like 50 or 60,000, mm-hmm. like real quick. And I was like, holy shit. Do you have companies offering you? Well, you've already. I've just started having companies like being like, can we send you something free? And you can do like an unboxing on your channel.
Oh,
and I'm
wow.
just saying yes to everything.
Wow.
I'm going to do one on Monday. I'm going to post this fucking biker jewelry. Mm. It's like fucking like skull necklaces.
That's
and
fun.
Whatever rings. I got a bunch of that now.
We're like the same age, and it's like, it's really crazy how like you have to like kind of change with the times. You know what I mean? Because I was so adamant of like, yo, I really just like taking photos of mountains and camping.
Yeah.
And like, I really like photography as a hobby. I don't want to like ruin stand up by having to like edit clips and stuff. And it, we came up with the way of like the way into making it big is you have a TV show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I got really close to having a TV show. And when that went away, I was like, fine, I'll learn how to fucking caption my shit.
Are you editing your own stuff?
Yeah, because I know how to edit. Like, yeah, I edited same. In high school and stuff. So I'm like, why would I pay anybody to do something that's very easy?
Because it's time consuming is the only argument against that.
What else
that.
Am I doing?
Hey, same. I'm doing my own too.
So that like, I'm like, it's a one-to-one. Like, I'm like, oh my God, it's like, just because I was a grandpa that was like, that shit's lame. That's for young comics. And then you start doing it and you're like, maybe this is where the industry's headed.
It doesn't. It also makes sense. Post your thing and people like it and they follow you. It's not even weird.
Right.
It's kind of weird that you could get away. Well, I don't know. It's just kind of weird that you could get away with like, here's my 5-minute late night set. And now I get booked forever.
Well, yeah. But the thing is, like, I like post stuff from like. Like, I will do, like, Seth, you know, when this is just comedy talk now, then we get into the jobs. But I'll do, like, Seth Meyers, you know, and it's awesome, and, you know, that's the goal, and I it's fun, and it's exciting, it's live TV. And, like, I am not, you know, like, 100,000 people will, like, see that on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I pull a clip off that, and you put it on Instagram, it's, like 4 million people.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm like... Yeah. Well, this is way more people are watching this than like traditional television.
Yeah, no, it's insane.
Which is like upsetting, but like, but I'm sure I equated it to like when like, you know how they were, they went from silent films to like talkies and the sure. silent film stars were like, this will never work.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear anyone talk.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, I'm like, I can't be a silent film star. I need to go into talkies.
And good. I'm glad you are, like, and I feel like this is the right age or right time where I'm like still willing to grow with the time. But like, give me 10 more years and I'll be like, I can't.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, when like Snapchat came out, I was like, fuck, I'm 35 and this is the I'm done. I can't do a new thing. I never did Snapchat.
I said no to Twitter until like my agent was like, you need to get on Twitter. I'm like, I already overshare on stage.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'm already getting away with it. I don't want it. I go back. I love when people call me out on deleting a tweet. And I'm like, I delete tweets every single day. I literally,
You out on deleting tweets?
Well, I mean, I troll a little bit. I've been trolling Andrew Tate's Twitter account
who's
a lot
Andrew
lately.
Tate? Who's this character?
Oh my God, Andrew Tate is. I'm getting death threats, by the way, like as we speak today.
I can't wait to get in on this action after
Andrew
this comes
Tate
out.
Is an ex what lightweight. Champion boxer or something that you know, he's retired from boxing. He's probably 36 years old.
Sounds pretty
and
strong.
He is crazy rich and he's like, I'm gonna go to Romania where it's already corrupt so I can get away with anything. And he started like a girls webcam fucking company where like he basically he's sitting in a jail cell right now being investigated by Romanian authorities for sex trafficking and rape and all these crazy things.
Whoa,
and
he's hard to get in like trouble in Romania.
Well, that's the thing. He's like, I can go out there because I can buy my way out of everything. And now he's like, he thinks the Matrix is real. He's okay. All his fans are, you know, sorry, like I'm gonna get fucking death threats for saying this shit. It's insane. Like it's like he's just got like an incel kind of. He basically tells people it's like, you have to learn how to hustle to make money, and you have to. Fucking, you know, do push-ups and be strong and stuff. It's just not anything you need advice from. You know to work hard and try to be healthy.
Yeah.
Like you can get that same advice from everybody, but you know, you can get
I can give you that advice. I'm like, you should do push-ups, and they're like, do you do them? I'm like, sometimes.
Yeah. I did push-ups this morning.
I still
get called fucking soy boy every day on Twitter by his fans, which by the way, have they not done the research of the soy female estrogen? It's not doing it. Soy's not fucking anybody up.
Are you a vegan vegetarian?
No.
Okay.
But I like soy. You know, you like soy sauce on your sushi.
Yeah.
I kind of. You're not gonna grow tits, dude.
Well, I'm glad that you're attacking a guy in jail. It sounds like he's, you know, doing
he's on camera hitting women and stuff. Like I don't like him.
Yeah, no, he doesn't sound like a good guy.
No, he's not a good guy.
But let's get to the bottom of how we got to you getting death threats. where the fuck are you from?
Okay, I grew up in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? I mean, I got my...
I just associate with New York, you know,
yeah.
Because it's like where I know you from comedy.
I'm an East Coast guy for sure. My parents are both super thick Boston accents. Mm-hmm. They're both from like outside Boston. And then, you know... went to New Hampshire to start a family. And so I got a little brother. We were up in New Hampshire. And then when
we're at New Hampshire.
Bow, New Hampshire. It's right on the border of Concord, which is the capital. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, boring kind of good childhood.
Like, what's that? What's that like? You know, not like what's a good childhood like? What's New Hampshire? What's growing
sure.
up in New Hampshire?
I grew up.
Like?
My little town was like 5,000 people, but we're also like on the border of Concord, which is the capital, which is also small. And we're like, I don't know, 40 minutes north of like Manchester and an hour north of like Nashua and mm-hmm. probably still like an hour and a half from like Boston. So
I always had beef with Manchester, New Hampshire, because I grew up in Manchester, Iowa. And,
oh, yeah.
It's like the seventh like most popular Manchester out of seven in the United States.
Yours is?
Yeah.
Did we have the most popular one?
Manchester, New Hampshire, much more popular than Manchester, Iowa.
Okay. That yeah. makes sense. I was, yeah. Manchester was like Manchester, Nashua, I would say without being 100% sure, but I think are the bigger cities as far as New
they
Hampshire
have malls,
goes.
I'm sure.
We got malls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
I lived in a small town. We had like, you know, we all had a ton of woods and yards, and it was a lot of like flag football and playing in the woods and
riding
you
bikes.
Know, getting in trouble. Yeah, riding bikes, shooting stuff with BB guns in the woods and stuff. Like yep. it was awesome. And we were outside all the time, and you know, there's hiking and mountains and rivers and fishing, and we had a lake house. If you don't like my comedy, blame my parents for giving me a good childhood.
I mean, that's fun. That all sounds great.
Yeah, it was good. I played all the sports because it was a small school. Mm-hmm. And then when I was like 15, my dad got a job in Atlanta. And so we moved to Georgia, which when you're, you know, from the north and move to the south, like that sucks. And I was a new kid. That's why I started getting jobs. Actually, my first job, if we're going to get into first jobs, was when I was 14, New Hampshire International Speedway in Loudoun, like where they did like Winston Cups and NASCARs and all mm-hmm. that stuff opened. And I don't know, my dad like heard from somebody that they would hire 14-year-olds. So I was 14 and I got a job like flipping burgers and making like steak bombs and all these things. And they were like,
steak bombs,
just a big fucking steak sub with, you know,
peppers and onions. Like a Philly cheesesteak?
Like a Philly cheesesteak. Yeah. They called them steak bombs, yeah.
So you're working at like NASCAR events at 14?
14, yeah.
I've been to a NASCAR event and it's a rowdy crowd.
Yeah. It's I mean, the cars are loud as shit.
The cars are so loud.
That was fun. Like I was never like I don't like follow NASCAR, but if you're right. there and go outside and watch them, you're like, I get it. This is awesome.
Oh, I like my dad loved NASCAR growing up, and we went once to like the Michigan 500. And like, I was like, okay, you know, neat. And then once I'm there, I'm like, this is fucking rad.
Yeah, it's yeah. rad. That yeah. stuff and monster truck stuff. I love
like,
going to that
and
stuff.
And like pro wrestling, like WrestleMania is happening in Los Angeles, and Summer's never been, my girlfriend's never been to pro wrestling. I'm like, we're going nice. To WrestleMania.
When I was in high school, when I moved to Georgia, I went to high school with, I was friends with Dusty Rhodes' daughter.
Oh,
right?
Yeah?
Because they're all from, like, Marietta, Georgia and stuff.
Right.
And so I got to meet, like, Dusty Rhodes a few times. And I think, I'm not a big enough wrestling fan, but his, like, kids who are wrestlers.
Cody Rhodes just won the fucking Royal Rumble yeah. and is likely to wrestle Roman Reigns at WrestleMania okay. for the title.
So he was in the grade below me. And, like, everyone.
Cody Rhodes, yeah, the American Nightmare?
And everyone already knew he was going to be a pro wrestler and stuff.
Oh, my God, because his dad, do you know, so you met Dusty Rhodes and he's like, hey, what's how they going, Adam?
Yeah, yeah.
How
I went
about
to, you? So Teal, we like follow each other. She's on Twitter and stuff. She's cool as shit.
Adam, you're my number one favorite daughter friend. How are you doing, daddy?
I went to my friend's like graduation party at her house, like when we graduated high school. Mm-hmm. And Dusty Rhodes is there with like his like biker dudes. They all have like little like gold earrings and stuff. And I was vegetarian. I was vegetarian in like high school and actually through college in
that
high school.
That doesn't help when you move from the north to no. Atlanta and you're like, I'm a vegetarian. They're like, well, we don't like that.
Yeah.
We already didn't like you and you no. gave us a reason.
Yeah.
Now.
And now I'm like, do you have a fucking
excuse
whatever.
Me, Mr. Rhodes? Do you have any not pork chops?
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. Is this made
it's
with
pork chops?
Is this fucking beef broth that these yeah. are in? But no, but Dusty Rhodes was like, do you have a, he gave me like a meatball and a toothpick. And I was yeah. like, oh, I can't do meatballs. He's like, these are my grandmother's. I'm doing Jewish now.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But that's
sorry.
It, Dusty Rhodes. I'll do it.
All right. These are my grandmother's recipe meatballs.
Okay, let's try that. I'll be Dusty Rhodes because I love doing Dusty Rhodes because he's
great.
Very like, hey, you look like a little hungry there. Here we go.
Oh, no, I can't. I'm sorry. Thank you.
My grandmother made these.
I'll have one.
Try
I'll have one.
Yeah,
I'll have one.
Put it in your mouth, daddy. Enjoy. Yeah. You're a college-bound child.
I think it's the one piece of meat I had in 5 years.
Did eat it?
Yeah. Dusty Rhodes hands you a fucking meatball that is grandmother's recipe. You eat the meatball. And you go, all right, it's fine.
That's incredible. It's the coolest story I've ever heard. Dusty Rhodes is like my favorite professor of wrestling of all time.
I met him a couple times. Nicest dude ever. His family seems like the coolest fucking people. His daughter, I remember, I was like much more like into like, you know, rock, metal, whatever music. And I remember his daughter gave me her name's Teal, and she's super cool. And I interact with her every now and again on Twitter, but I haven't seen her in like 15 years. But she gave me like a 3-6 Mafia CD. She gave me I think a Snoop Dogg CD. She gave me like all these rap albums, which was like the only rap stuff I had at the time. But it was cool.
Is this from Teal Rhodes? This rocks.
Yeah. That's
very cool. Yeah.
I think it's my first celebrity I met, which was cool.
Well, that's the only celebrity you need to meet.
There are a bunch of wrestlers in Atlanta. I think it was Triple H or something. I worked at another place in Kennesaw, Georgia, Ippolito's Italian restaurant, which I got fired from because I had dreadlocks back then, which we can get into or not. But yeah. I remember Triple H was there, and I remember just like me and all the other busboys and waitresses and stuff were just like, you know, 20 feet behind him, like poking her from behind the kitchen, just like, look how big his back is. Yeah. His back was like this, like, it was like three people
wide. Well, I
think
Atlanta was like a main wrestling territory.
Yeah.
Okay. This is all very interesting.
I'm trying to tie in the job stuff.
No, I know, but so you worked at the NASCAR place for like.
That was in New Hampshire, yeah.
Oh, that was in New Hampshire?
Loudoun International Speedway, New Hampshire International Speedway. It was like brand new at the time. 14 years old, that was my first job. $5.50 an hour, I think I got for that. Mm-hmm. And you said, so crowds are rowdy at NASCAR. I don't know if this is true for all of them. This is the only racetrack I've been to. That's not true. But it's one of the only racetracks I've been to. I remember they were allowed to bring in coolers of a certain size. Okay. So it was like, you know, some people bring in beers.
Pre-9/11.
Yeah, it was. This would have been 97.
That's what I'm
maybe.
Saying. Like, it used to be like, yeah, you can bring in like, whatever you want.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, yeah, sandwiches, beers, but other people were just like, it was just bottles of liquor. People were just annihilated. The other fun part was our concession stands were under the stands. And so from the safety of inside our concession stands, when it was done, you got to watch outside the stands as everybody's leaving from underneath. People just dumped their coolers and ice in the stands. So from underneath, you just see everyone, fans, cops, everything, just get drenched with whatever gross cooler liquids are coming down.
First pair of live boobs I've ever seen was at a NASCAR. Was at the Michigan 500.
That's great.
Yeah, with my dad.
What do you remember about the boobs?
Both of us, I think, were probably trying not to look, you know what I mean? But the lady was literally like, if you give me a beer, I'll show you my boobs. And many people were offering beers. Yeah. And I'm like, yo, NASCAR rocks.
I remember the first boobs I saw in real life that were, you know, I was excited about was we went. This makes me sound so fucking like a rich family, and I feel bad about it. But we went on a vacation when I was a kid to like Antigua or something. And I remember my dad, like, you know, some people from European countries and stuff.
Topless beach.
Just topless beach. So my dad would just keep telling my mom to like, go stand over there. I'll take a picture of you on the beach. But it was really just to get the boobs in the background.
Oh, and my gosh. Yeah.
We got a lot of those pics.
We were just in like Italy and Croatia, Summer and I, over the summer. And it's all topless, you know, and bottomless. Not the women. I didn't see any women doing bottomless, but there was a couple, like, you know, there might have been. I'm not tracking for that, you know.
No.
But like 80% topless, like, and you know, like Summer got after it. And I was like, rock and roll.
Great.
Yeah, like, you're here. No one. It's like almost it's better that way, because then as a child, if you're like around boobs, then that you maybe you're not like so like. Like
just gross about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, gross like, about it. It's not. There's nothing weird about it. Yeah. You're not like I gotta see the boobs.
Yeah,
because they're around and it's like desensitized or whatever. You know what I mean?
Normalized.
It's
normalized.
Yeah.
Normalized boobs out.
Yeah, absolutely. So go to Antigua or the Michigan 500 if you want to normalize boobs out.
Yeah.
So then you move to Atlanta, become friends with Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
And Cody Rhodes is a grade below you. That's very cool. He is currently like the most popular wrestler in WWE by far.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
When you're like that fucking freshman shit. Yeah, that would have been a freshman that kicked everybody else's ass.
Yeah.
That guy,
I
remember,
put him in a headlock. He beat the shit out of me afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. So what are you doing in Atlanta for that? You sound like you didn't enjoy your time that much. I didn't.
So the first year of like high school sucked, 'cause I was like, all right, I'm gonna be a new kid. I like the band Korn a lot, so I'm going to get dreadlocks.
Oh,
and
no.
So I was a new kid with dreadlocks, which led to bad acne, which because it's greasy and gross. And then I just started like playing guitar all the time, and I got a job at I need to get a job. So I got a job at Einstein Bagels, which was like almost across the street from my house. And I also decided I was going to be an aggressive inline skater. And so
I got really into inline skating.
I actually got into it in New Hampshire, like with a buddy a couple years before. So it like kind of.
What year were you born?
82.
Okay. I'm 86. But yeah, there was like a point in time where like inline skating fucking rocked.
It was cool.
Yeah.
Like it was.
I was like, really, I really wanted to get into roller derby.
I see roller derby clips just like pop into my feed every now and again. And like it's full contact. Race rollerblading on a track looks fun.
I mean, I was riffing on it the other day about how like it's the toughest, and it's the only thing that's very tough and very gay.
Yeah.
Where it's just yeah. like,
and know, there's names and costumes.
Well,
and
no, I'm just like, it's like, man, look at those badasses on rollerblades. Like that's never set.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
Don't go over by the rollerblade guys. Those guys will beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
It's rare. You know, normally it's like, well, the guy's on a rollerblade. That guy's stupid.
Only because it's been like turned into a joke that rollerblading. I mean, that's like one of the most popular jokes ever.
All the time. The hardest part about rollerblading is telling
your
dad.
Who is that?
Gay.
Is that Demetri Martin or something? I don't even know.
I think it's so well worn that I remember the Human Giant did a sketch on it.
Yeah.
And Aziz had to go tell his parents he was gay. And he was like, I will be honest, like, that was very hard. Compared to, you know, the turning and the skating.
Oh, I mean, whatever. There was a time where it was new and fresh, but now we look at it like it's been done a million times.
I think actually it's coming back because kids, like, teens these days are anti making fun of anything. And if
that's
you like
true.
Roller skating, you get to like roller skating.
I wish I could remember his name right now. There's a guitar YouTube channel that I love. I'm blanking on his name. It's driving me crazy. This dude, Rob Scallion, something like that. He plays like crazy 8-string guitars, and he does all these fun projects. Me and my buddy are going to write a whole album in a day, and he's like an insanely good musician, but he's also just like a side thing every now and again. He's like, also, we're going to go rollerblade. We're going to go skating while we're here. And he's doing all these, you know, I remember what they're called, unity grinds. Remember when your legs are crossed?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't do them.
I haven't seen anyone just like openly... openly, proudly rollerblading in like 15 years, and it makes me really happy.
I loved rollerblading. So you're there.
I was rollerblading to work at Einstein's.
Rollerblade to Einstein's. Yeah. That was a bit I closed on. It was a guy who rollerbladed to a party and got mad and left on my half hour. And it's just a guy who, because it takes so long to put on.
It does.
So
you can't slide them on.
No,
they gotta
be like,
tight.
Fuck you, I'm out. You're like, yeah. Fuck you. All right, hold on. All
I don't remember if we did our half hours or not
it
together,
matter,
but I remember your half hour. I loved it.
I just enjoy the rollerblading so much. Okay, so you are rollerblading to work and then taking that extra 5 minutes to put real shoes on.
Yeah. And you can't fucking work at Einstein's and rollerblades. You can work at Sonic, maybe you can wear your rollerblades.
That's true, yeah. Danny Solomon worked at Sonic.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny. Yeah. I knew he loved Sonic, and we've done the Irvine Improv, and we've done some little road gigs and stopped at Sonic's if we knew there was one on the way, but I had no idea he worked at one.
He's got the same maybe sort of like Stockholm Syndrome with Sonic that I do with Papa John's. That I worked at Papa John's, and like I still love it.
He worked at
Sonic and still loves it.
That's so funny. I love Einstein Bagels still.
Really? You got a little... But Einstein Bagels is good. Like, Papa John's isn't good. Sonic's not good.
Papa John's is a guilty pleasure fast food pizza that I do love, and I love the garlic dipping sauce and all that, but, like, Papa John himself is a piece of shit, and
well, actually, I only like it because of his
policies. Yeah, good.
Food's not that good, but, like, I just gotta support my man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's got a big house. Have you seen that? I remember like seeing.
I mean, I'll talk about it later. I don't know.
So you worked at Pizza Place?
Well, no, I can say this. I'm sure because I think they announced they were trying when I was working on my show at Absolutely. Eric Andre was working on their show, and I was asking who the guests they were getting. And they were really gunning for Papa John.
Oh, man. For like the Eric Andre show talk show? Oh, that would have been great.
And I was like, you got to get him.
Yeah.
You got to get that guy on your show. Yeah. And I won't say whether or not they did, but it was just like, that was like a topic of like, that would be the most interesting thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what. Yeah, he seems like he is, and I wonder what his sense of humor would be about himself to do a show like
it,
that.
It wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Remember how he's like, I ate 80 pizzas this month to try it, and they all sucked. I'm like, you ate 80 pizzas? What the fuck are you talking about? He's like, I'm going to take this company, because they kick him out.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to take him down. I ordered 80 pizzas from him. I'm like, that's not going to help him,
did
buddy.
Did he pay for him? I know. Yeah. Like, that branch just did better than they've done.
Yeah.
Papa John's was like the go. It was like, that was the cheap one at university. I went to UGA because we went to Georgia. They got Hope Scholarship. That was a big perk of going to Georgia is Hope Scholarship. Florida has a similar thing, like paid by the lottery. If you keep a 3.0 GPA, you basically go to certain colleges within that university system for free. So I got to go to college for free.
Oh, cool.
But Athens, Georgia always had a Papa John's student Saturday deal or
that's
something like
cool.
that.
Cool. So you like you get good grades in high school. You're working at Einstein Bagels.
Yeah, I was a new kid, and going from New Hampshire to Georgia school was like I didn't have to do. It was the easiest thing in the world. And yeah, I worked at Einstein's for nothing like years,
crazy. Yeah.
And that's where I met all my friends in college. Like everyone who worked there, you know, I'm a new kid with dreadlocks. I look stupid. I'm shy. Whatever, but then I at least when you work with people every day, you get to know them a little bit, and they became like my friends. I'm still buds with a lot of those dudes.
Rad.
Now they all turned out to be good, except one dude who fucking one dude at that job who I thought I was friendly with decided like enough of Einstein Bagels, he's gonna quit. And on his way out, I thought he was like walking towards the back to talk to the boss or something, and he just stopped right in front of me with customers and everything and just open hand slapped me in the face as hard as he could. And I didn't fall. I just like I was stunned. Everyone was just like stunned. And then he looked like he was like he like kind of looked like he regretted it, and he was like going to apologize, and then just like left and walked out. And everybody was like, what was that about? And I was like, we were cool. I like went to his band show like a week earlier. I had no idea what it was about.
Oh my God.
No idea what it was about.
Let's unpack that for 2 seconds.
Okay.
So this
I remember his first and last name.
Listener.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm so mad. I'm so fed up with this place. I'm going to quit. And then he just walks by somebody and he's like, I got to slap somebody.
Yeah. Like, and I think maybe I was the least scary one to do that.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard of.
One theory on why he did it. This is the only thing I can think of. Maybe a few weeks earlier, like we were either closing or nobody was there, and the five people working there thought it'll be funny. We're like, you know, between 15 and 18 years old.
He like pissed in his drink.
No.
Like, okay, now I know I
between all of us, we thought it was funny. We're like, let's do like a slap competition. Like we were just like, you know, taking turns slapping each other in the face. Who would do it the hardest? Very just boys being boys. And I think maybe I went against him, maybe but I don't remember like anyone being mad or doing it too hard. And then just cut to a few weeks later, and he slapped me in the face as hard as he could. I was like, it's the only thing I can think.
Well, I'm pretty sure there's a direct correlation.
There's got to be.
You're not sure or not if you slapped a man, and then 2 weeks later he slapped you.
Right, but this was consensual, agreed upon slapping with rules and parameters and an audience. And
oh yeah, you know how slap fights are all never escalate. Never once has anybody slapped somebody as a joke and the other person got mad about it.
That's true.
And quit Einstein Bagels.
Yeah.
And on the way out, slapped the guy that slapped them. You're like, this guy out of nowhere slapped me. 2 weeks earlier, I slapped him, but I said, can I slap you?
Yeah, but there was a whole, it was structured. There was a competition.
Sounds like a wild card. He's slapping random people. That guy doesn't
you're right,
follow
it wasn't,
structure.
Yeah. It wasn't as random.
So yeah, no.
Slapping's hot again now with the tortillas.
What?
You're not seeing this viral TikTok sensation?
I will post on TikTok, but I don't look at it because I understand how addicted I would get to it.
I lose time on it. I do enjoy it, but I lose time on it. Now people are slapping each other as hard as they can with a tortilla, like a flour tortilla.
Okay, exciting. So you go to college for what?
Psychology.
What's the plan? What did your parents do?
My dad's like an accountant, and my mom's like a nutritionist.
They're
not into music or comedy. I mean, they like music and comedy, but they're not like they're not like involved in it. But I go to UGA, and I was like, political science. I'm just starting to like be like, okay, politics are interesting. And then, and I, you know, I go, and then my freshman year is, starts in late August of, 2001. So I'm political science. And then like 3 weeks into college, 9/11 happens. Right. And, my whole political science goes towards like, I don't know, domestic, foreign policy and whatever. And for some reason I wasn't interested in that. It would have been, I should have been interested in it, but I wasn't. So I was like, I don't know what I want to do. I'll be a teacher. And I went to like education, and then I took like an educational psychology class, and I was like, psychology's cool. And then, yeah, I just like got into psychology, and I was like, I'll be a professor.
Well, that's all like completely reasonable for like an 18, 19 year old to like, yeah, you know, not be unsure, you know, like I was like, I'm going to be a doctor. Yeah. And then I was just like, you know, finished my,
you went to Iowa.
Yeah. And then but you know, 1 year into college, I was like, I'm not going to be a doctor.
Yeah.
There's people in my class who should be doctors.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them.
Well, so I cared about, I loved comedy since I was a little kid. I was like first grade. My mom gave me her record collection, and I had like Carlin and all. I was like super into comedy, but I never thought about doing it till after college, because I didn't know you could just do it.
Right.
But at that point I was like, I just want to be in a band. And Athens, Georgia is like best music city. It's awesome. So
who all came out of there?
REM,
okay.
Neutramilk Hotel,
yeah.
B-52s.
I mean,
a lot of weird, smaller stuff like the Elephant Six
but
stuff.
But I mean, you said three bands I definitely know, yeah, and that's a lot for not a big town.
Yeah, and comedians came when I was in, the Comedians of Comedy Tour came every year I was there.
Cool.
Mitch Hedberg was the first comedian I ever saw when I was like 19.
Oh, what was that like? I've never
at the
saw 40
Watt,
Hedberg.
40 Watt in Athens. I'm sure you've seen the 40 Watt.
Yep.
I don't know if you've been to Athens.
I have not, but I know what the 40 Watt is.
Yeah, Patton Oswalt did stuff there. Yep. But they would come there every year.
What was seeing Mitch Hedberg like?
Okay, so I was like 19 years old. It was my first apartment. It was the first year out of the dorms. And my buddy was like, we're going to see this comedian. Do you want to go? And I was like, sure. He was like, it's Mitch Hedberg. I was like, I think that sounds familiar. And he shows me like a picture or a clip. And I was like, I remember that guy. Sunglasses, looking down, long hair. And I just knew like a couple of his jokes. And went, and it was like a rock venue, standing room only, maybe like 500 or 600 people. And literally like one of those days where like your face and stomach belly hurt for like 3 days afterwards, because you're just like hysterical the entire time. Someone used to go around the shows in Athens with like whatever the little like MP3 player thing, not like an iPod, but like an MP with some MP3 thing where you could record if you had a nice microphone. So right. I weirdly have like a really pro recording of that Mitch Hedberg show.
Whoa, I want it.
I'll see if I send it to you. It's a bunch of Mitch Hedberg jokes I haven't really heard in other places.
Yeah, I like Mitch Hedberg's my favorite comedian of all time.
You'll listen to the set and be like, this is the best comedy set I've ever. People are like, he's dealing really well with people yelling what jokes to do and stuff towards the end of it. It's an incredible set.
Yeah, I can't believe that you got to see Mitch Hedberg. Anybody I know who like interacted with him or toured with him, I'm always just like, what was that like? Yeah. And they're like, he was so nice.
I did not get to meet him, I don't think Tony Rock opened for him,
yeah,
if I remember.
I mean, I'm just like, I'm so fascinated with Hedberg. So you love comedy. You're into comedy. You go, you see Mitch Hedberg. That's got to like shatter your, you know, brain.
That was the 100% like, well, here's the other thing is I had never been to a comedy club. This was at a music venue that my band played at. So all of a sudden it was like you can just do it here. Mm-hmm. I didn't know comedians did stuff at rock venues. So immediately it was like, okay, this is like a thing that I could do. Yeah. Or like, you know, you could just book yourself.
It seemed attainable.
Yeah. And the first show I ever did was, it was still a few years later, but it was when I graduated college, but it was a band, it was a dive bar that my band played a bunch in Atlanta called Lenny's Bar that's closed now. But it was like, I just booked a music venue, and I didn't know, it was my first time. I didn't know about open mics. I just did.
Right.
I was like, well, I've seen Comedy Central Half Hour and I've seen HBO Hours, so we'll split the difference. I'll do 45 minutes.
That's like surprisingly like what a lot of us, like I didn't start with 45, but I think maybe my third set was 45.
Yeah. And I didn't have 45.
No, you didn't.
I did. I remember breaking it up. I saw, cause I was at that time I was super into, I had seen, because of the people who came through the 40 Watt, like the Home Movies tour came. So I saw like Eugene Merman do stuff with like a screen and reading stuff. I saw, you know,
John
so I was
Benjamin
like,
Benjamin and shit.
Yeah. John Benjamin, Brendan Small with his guitar. Yeah. I didn't start doing stuff with my guitar until way, way later. But, yeah, I saw all that. So my first set, I was like, okay, I'm going to David Cross, I loved. And I was like, well, he just tells long drinking stories. You don't realize till later that there's more to it than that.
Yeah,
that
it's
he's
not
doing
just a
characters.
Story. There's actually like 57 jokes in the story.
But I started with like, okay, I borrowed a screen from a friend. I edited videos to get, dude. I was in the deep south and I edited. I took the scenes from the Passion of the Christ where he like goes up on the cross, and I took out the, I edited in like circus music and fart noises and stuff. Like,
yeah, because when you're new, you're just like, I'm just gonna shock him. I'm gonna be the comic that people are like, I can't believe he's doing that.
Yeah,
and they're like, and then you grow up and you're like, well, I should be funny. Then I could.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. A lot of R words.
A lot of R words.
A lot of the R word.
Oh, like
in my first
mentally
stuff.
Mentally challenged.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No, we don't like that. So, but like, what led you to doing that, I guess? And then what leads you to like going to New York to pursue comedy full time?
So was always obsessed with stand up. The band I was in was like very, you know, jokey, take our always wearing underwear. We never like exposed ourselves, but a lot of like half nudity, back to back tapping solos, legs on the monitors. We were like goofy and silly, and I liked getting laughs doing that. And I saw a ton of comedy in college, and then I just got the most boring job. I graduated and got a job with like the survey research department. Basically, I was creating and maintaining databases and scanning Scantron type things and putting them in databases.
Yeah,
and I had a laptop. I would bring in DVDs of like Mr. Show and Kids in the Hall, and YouTube was like brand new. So I was like watching. I was like starting to see people doing stand up at like little clubs in New York and stuff, and then like going to comedians' websites. Like I think Zach Galifianakis at the time, his website, his bio was like two sentences, and one was like, "I started in the back room of a hamburger place in New York," and I'm Googling like hamburger stand up in New York, and I like find the place, and I'm like, "You can just do this." I was like, I'm going to move. I was so just for that whole job, I was just like writing down ideas. And I'm like, I'm going to move to New York and do comedy. But I tried it like I think July 1st, 2006 was that first time I ever did it. And August 2nd, I moved to New York. So it was like,
okay,
cool. I was like, I didn't, Laughing Skull didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Punchline was like so out of anybody's league. So I was like, I just got to move. I'm going to move to New York and do open mics.
So what, did you have a job planned out in New York, or you're like, I'll find one when I get there?
This was MySpace days. I had two buds who had moved to one. I had one friend who moved to New York, and he's like, I can set you up with a job. And then my other friend, I had two friends who moved to New York, and the other friend could set me up with a roommate. So she hooked me up with a roommate. My other buddy had a job for, it was weird because it was also like a survey research, market research kind of job.
Yeah, but
this job was crazy. They got bought out by Nielsen. What it was you would go in during, you'd go in at night. And so I couldn't do open mics every night, but you could go in at night or you could go in after your open mics. And you would sit at a station. There were like tons of just like people our age, like early 20s. And you would sit at like a computer, it would be like a TV with like a DVR, and you would watch, you'd be assigned a show to watch that was like on prime time the night before. Like you'd watch 30 Rock, and you would log how long certain like products would be on TV. Like if there's a Snapple in a shot, you go, okay, it's on there for 8 seconds. Wow. And then later you make a, you write questions. You're just writing like research. You're writing questions. When Tina Fey does this, how long, what brand of beverage was on the table? And it was like Snapple. And those, so these surveys were made for, I don't know if it was made for the networks or products or what, but it was.
Sounds like it was like proof of concept. Like Snapple's like, hey, we'll pay this much, but we need to know people know that.
That's exactly what it was. The point of it was we're seeing how many people clock what's on there. And so that, you know, determined rates for advertising and all that stuff. So we were doing, and the people who took the surveys, like, signed up for the survey site, and they get points and little rewards and stuff. So that was that job.
That's fucking crazy.
And I did that. It was like $16 an hour, which when
that's
I moved to,
great.
It was great. And then I was good enough at it that they gave me it as a day job at some point. After like a year, they gave it to me as a day job. So now I have like a 9-to-5 where I'm making like $40,000, and I'm 24 years old.
Yep.
I also was taking UCB classes on the weekends, where someone sent me a thing that was like, go be an extra in this new company's making videos, which was College Humor. So I was an extra in a College Humor video, hit it off with like everybody on set. And then they hired me as a, I ended up getting laid off from that job, so I was on unemployment, and then I was just like an actor for College Humor for a year, and then when they got their MTV show got picked up, they were like, we can hire more people now, and they hired me, and that's the last job I ever had. I worked at College Humor for like 4 years.
College Humor was so big when I was in college, because you're 4 years older than me,
yeah.
So like I remember like submitting videos to get featured on College Humor and writing things and submitting them for College Humor
articles and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember like one thing was like a featured thing on College Humor, and that was like my credit for like the first like 4 years of my comedy was like, has been featured on College Humor,
which was like legit back then.
Yeah. What was it like working at College Humor? Because I mean, College Humor is like early internet, we're doing it. You guys are like making sketches.
Yeah.
Like it was cool.
My first, so when I was like 24 and they were like, just go be an extra in this thing. It was one of the early videos they did was called Bohemian Rhapsody, which you can immediately, it's a frat boy Bohemian Rhapsody parody. And John Gabrus was the main dude in it. That's where I first met John Gabrus. And I remember walking in and just seeing like all the cameras and the light, like, you know, like actual lights. This is more than just like your buddies with a camera. I was like, oh, this is like an actual production. I remember thinking Gabrus was getting paid like $10,000 to do it and stuff. And, you know, it was like anyone else. We all got paid like $100. But that was just like the videos. And then I got to act in those. And I'm like, I'm in UCB 101 and I'm getting to act in these videos that are getting millions of views. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And then they hired me, and I mean, I was like, it was an office job where everyone hangs out and does stuff after. It's like you could swear at work and wear whatever you want, not have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. The weed delivery guy came by once a week and stuff, like
Who owned College Humor? Like, whose idea was that?
When I was there, it was started by Ricky Van Veen and Josh Abramson, I believe there were four people that started it, but when they got bought, the other two just dipped out, and Josh and Ricky were running it when I was there, and Josh ended up working at, like, mostly running Busted Tees, which I guess is T Public now, I think.
That sounds right.
His t-shirt thing went off and Ricky was still I don't know where Ricky is now, but I think Samurai owns College Humor now or whatever's left of it, and has turned it into Dropout. But it was bought by IAC, which is Barry Diller's company, who, if you don't know who Barry Diller is, he's who Mr. Burns from The Simpsons is based off of.
Oh,
he's
incredible.
Just like media conglomerate, huge guy. And he would walk through the office every now and again, and we'd all be on our best behavior. But that company was very much like, let the kids run it.
So that was like when you were like, cool. How long into living in New York did you get that gig?
Like 2 years.
Oh,
and
I had
a job when I got there, and then was on unemployment for the other year. So I didn't have that tough of a time.
I know it's
in New York.
Like, yeah, I had a similar thing I talk about sometimes where like I moved out here, I did engineering for 4 years, and I got SNL. I was like, this is not that hard of a career, you know. And then like, then you know, when those things go away, and you're like, oh fuck, this is a very hard career.
My last few years have been harder than any of those early years.
It's just like yeah,
because I refuse to have a job now. Like anytime there's a. I'm just like refuse to have a College Humor was a different thing. But I also was like, College Humor was a cool job. It was a cool early comedy job because it's not like you're hired as a staff writer that makes $1 million. You're like, there are writers, there are production people, they actually made me casting director because they didn't need a writer. They were just like, hire more people. We have so many things going on. We just need people. We don't have a dedicated casting person. We now have like four teams of video production that are constantly making videos. Adam knows all the stand-ups and all the improv people. So, like, you help us set up auditions, general auditions.
And you're, like, 2 years into New York. You're like, no, I don't.
I don't.
You guys think I do.
I'm 26 years old with a College Humor business card that says casting director.
Yeah.
Just way too afraid to show it to a girl because I'm like, I'm going to get in trouble. That's going to just not be the way to do that.
Are you talking about how you're gonna like take advantage of a lady because you're a casting director?
Yeah,
you're already a predator at 26.
No, I was not. I've never been a predator. I was like, I knew,
but like that's
I looked
where your
at this
mind
card.
Went?
I was like, I could be a predator with this card.
Yeah, I could be.
I'm
not going to be. But
a 26 year old horny dude with a business card that says casting director on it.
You don't think it.
I didn't do it.
I know, but I don't even like that people would think about it.
Well, what I know the bad things that a man can do.
Sure.
But yeah. You ask around. I was in long-term good. This sounds like what a predator would say if they were And I, now, ever since I grew the hair out, I'm just getting fucking Walmart Chris D'Elia comments every day.
D'Elia than normal.
Sucks.
And then you're telling me about this casting director predator stuff. Okay, so comedy. I mean, college humor.
So it was a very fun job, and I got to be in a zillion videos.
And you got to do stand up every night.
And I got to do stand up every night. And College Humor had a live show, which I begged forever to be on, and they finally put me on. And that's how like Ann and Joanne, when the people who used to book all the Comedy Central stand up,
yep,
saw me there, and I got on everyone's radar through that.
Very cool.
So it's like when everyone is like, should I move to New York? I'm like, yeah, you should move to New York and get a job that everybody knows, that's like trailblazing new things. And I don't know what to tell anybody.
Just go
and do open mics and take advantage of any cool opportunity that comes along.
Yeah, that's absolutely like all I've like repeated a million times in the podcast. Just like go to where comedy's happening that isn't like crazy. You know what I mean? Like, if you have a job, like if you have the ability to get a job where comedy's happening, go fucking take that job and go just have. But like, I've had so many people on this podcast, they're like, I moved out here with no idea. And then they always leave and have to come back because like, you gotta suss it out a little bit.
My mistake here maybe was I didn't move out here with a job or a gig. But I had, you know, enough people telling me, oh, you move out here, we're going to sell this, you're going to cast on this and whatever.
LA, I like LA more than New York because this is where I got good at comedy. You always like the city you got good at comedy more.
I love and miss New York comedy so much, but I don't miss living there. I remember the first time I saw you out there, I think we were on a show at Union Hall and you were just shitting on New York and how there's trash everywhere. And I'm like, yeah. And it's funny, too, because you see a zillion comedians talk about New York versus LA. And I'm like, this is actually the first time I've ever seen a comedian just be like, there's piles of trash everywhere.
Well, I was.
You guys not think that's weird?
I was like, I came out being like, yo, New York fucking sucks.
Yeah.
And everyone in New York is like, New York is the best. And I'm like, New York is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
So that's like the way it worked. Cause like New York is also the only city that they like respect being told they suck. They're like, okay, he's not afraid of us. Okay.
Yeah.
Like you kind of have to attack a New York crowd.
Yeah.
If I came out to LA, like, and I'm like, LA, you a bunch of pussies, they'd be like, hey, really?
Hey, man, like, why are you?
But you say that to New York, they're like, okay, all right.
He's busting our fucking balls over here. Yeah, exactly. This guy can dish it. I hope he can take it.
Yeah. I do love New York comedy a lot.
New York gave me thick skin. I didn't leave New York because I was like, everybody's mean here or it's dirty here. I left New York because I was like, I have no control over when I get home. I'm so tired of waiting because it's such late nights in comedy. I'm not going to sit here and wait for a train for an hour every fucking night. And I can't afford to take cabs home every time. So it was literally my last year or two in New York. I bought a motorcycle. I got really into motorcycle YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I got really into American Chopper.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Love that show.
Let's talk about you getting your first Letterman appearance, and then we'll close out on that because that's like, you know, not many people have done that. I never did it.
I never aimed for it. I loved Conan. I love Letterman. I absolutely love Letterman, but Conan was the one. Sorry, I keep checking my nose. I got a bloody nose yesterday. Like
cocaine? Did you do too much cocaine?
This thing. I've never done. I'm so wired right now because of the Adderall and stuff. But I've never done cocaine in my life. I'm terrified of cocaine.
Well, it sounds like you did it because you got a bloody nose yesterday.
I know. And I think I had just a straight up anxiety bloody nose yesterday. I have no idea how else to explain it.
Incredible.
But I hadn't had a bloody nose in like 10 years.
Well, I'll let you know if it starts bleeding. Let's hear about this Letterman stuff.
Letterman. All right. What do you want to know about? Oh yeah, I always wanted Conan.
How did it happen?
Conan was my favorite. That guy just never gave me the time of day. I've always heard he's nice. I actually remember meeting him once. An agent I had at the time in Montreal was like, Adam, I want you to meet the Conan Booker, JP, and he was talking to you at the bar. And
JP rolls.
He tapped JP's shoulder. And he's like, hey, I want you to meet my guy Adam. And he just went like, nice to meet you. And he turned around, went back to talking to you. And I was like, all right, it's party time. Who knows what's going on?
Well, I think me and JP were like,
into something. He
had like okayed. We were okay in my set.
Yeah.
That then I didn't get to do when I got SNL.
Oh, fine.
Because like, I got Conan off of Montreal.
Oh.
But then SNL was like, no, we come do this. And I was like, okay. And then to how cool JP was, as soon as I was fired off SNL, I was like, can I do Conan like next week? And he's like, yeah, same set. I go, sounds great.
Amazing. I've heard from you, my other buds, Sean Donnelly, a bunch of my buds, Dave Bohr, a bunch of buds who have who have done Conan. I've always heard he's a great guy. I've just, he hasn't been into my sets, whatever. That's all personal preference and stuff. But so I was always frustrated with Conan, and then it was because everyone always thinks all this shit is through agents and managers. None of my late night spots were ever through agents or managers. There was I hosted I had a show at UCB East when they had a second New York location.
Yeah, that's where I lived. That was on 3rd and A. I lived 3rd and D.
Yeah, I used to have a show. Maybe you did it, actually. It was called Big Long Sets. Yeah. I used to have two comedians each half an hour.
I did, and I was really excited to do it. I was really honored. I was very pleased that you let me do it.
Of course.
Because it's so rare.
You could do a long set.
30 minutes.
Yeah, and it was awesome, because usually I would try to get someone that was like awesome, but maybe not a big draw.
Yeah.
And then it was like, Sarah Silverman's in town, or Jim Gaffigan's wants to run it. So it was always fun. But I just ran a show at UCB, and the artistic director at the time was buds with, this was after Eddie Brill was gone from there. So it was Ryan Williams was booking Letterman. And so he was buds with the artistic director. So he's like, just show me 10 of your favorite guys who are at UCB. So it was like that audition, by the way, the amount of people that got it from those auditions, that audition was, it was just his favorite comedians he saw at UCB regularly. It was me, Sean Donnelly, Chris DiStefano, Carmen Lynch. Man, there's a handful more that actually got it out of that whole thing.
That's always
fun.
But
it was just like a really great group, and everybody had good sets. And I just like did my showcase thing, and I was like, I'm gonna get to say I auditioned for Letter. Oh, by the way, I had a year earlier, an agent got me to audition for him, and I wasn't ready. I didn't have a set ready, and it just wasn't good. I never heard anything, whatever. But a year later, 2 weeks after the audition, I just got an email. He was like, "Hey, man, like, it's not the perfect set, but we like you and want to work with you on a set." And so for the next like 6 or 8 months, it was just like, I'd send tapes, or he'd come see me live, or we'd move stuff around. It was like a really long process.
Wow.
But I was just like, I'm like working towards it, and it was really fun.
Yeah, that's so supportive and so nice. It's just anytime anybody's like, not yet, but like, we're not mad at that, you're like, oh my God, that's incredible.
It was just like, we like how you do stand up. We like your jokes. We just need to find the set that works for it. And then at some point it was like, okay, it's greenlit. We'll let you know when you have a spot. And then I got a call. He got a call, and he's like, we're going to go ahead and greenlight your set and put you on the calendar, and we'll let you know when. And I was like, well, but like when? Like, I've always heard you get a call on Monday and you're in the morning and you're doing it that night. He was like, well, he put it on for, it was 9 weeks ahead. Okay. And I was like, oh, great. So I had 9 weeks of, I don't think I did anything else for 9 weeks. I ran that five minutes over and over and over and over. I was practicing it without a microphone, you know, I'm just like not touching the microphone. Mm-hmm. And then the day I was supposed to do it, they're supposed to pick me up, and they're like, a car is going to pick you up at like 3. I got a call at like 11 in the morning from Ryan, and he's like, so the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup last night. We're flying in the MVP, and everybody else is coming in from LA, so we're going to bump you. We'll let you know the date. And I literally, like, my knees just went, I collapsed on my floor in my room, just of like, you
have
stress.
Because you have 9 weeks of stress leading up to this
day. I'm fucking
day.
Ready.
Yeah.
And I begged him to give me a date on the phone, and he gave me another date for 3 weeks after that.
That's
and
great.
So we did it 3 weeks later, and it was great.
I had, like, not the same, because it wasn't, and I've told it, but I was just going to do, over the pandemic, a Zoom interview with Seth.
Cool.
Yeah, and he's like a friend, and it was great. And I was like, yeah, that sounds fun. You know, just goof around.
I'm jealous. You have some amazing comedy friends.
Sure. But
we I'm like, I tell, literally, I think I talked to you this week about, so I did this corporate gig this week, and this guy, whenever you do gigs like that, they're always like, do you know this person? Do you know this person? They can't believe it. But like, Tim Robinson is the guy that everyone's like, do you know? And I'm like, no, but I got a friend who I know is good friends with him. And I'm like,
I gotta have Tim on this podcast. I don't know. I love Tim so much. He's one of my best friends. But
it's amazing. Well, I get excited when
but we met at SNL under like duress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I didn't meet famous Tim. You know, I met
Tim. Round Ball Rock Tim.
He had done Round Ball Rock, but I hadn't.
Oh, that
seen
was
it
before
yet.
Your time. Yeah.
Either way,
Sorry, I don't mean to. I'm not trying to get anyone bragging about who they're friends with. I just think it's
no. He's
we've been doing comedy long enough now that it's always people that weren't famous or kind of famous now, and it's crazy.
But like my like really famous friends, I feel weird asking them to be on this podcast. You know what I mean? Because it's like, well, I don't know. You know, I don't want to like cross that line. Like I don't ask Seth or John Oliver or like Tim. I'm just like, nah, I don't know. They don't really do podcasts. They're kind of busy, you know, making great television. But so I was supposed to do Seth. And it was January 6th, 2021. And like at noon, I got the call. Like I got an email from him. I was like, hey, we're going to actually maybe not do the segment today.
Sure.
You know, on account of what's happening. I was like, what's happening?
I just woke up.
And then I looked. Well, I mean, I just wasn't watching news. And I looked at the news. I go, oh, yeah, let's not do me tonight.
Yeah.
But it was so much less pressure because I was just on with my friend. I can't imagine the day you're going to premiere on live television, they take it away. That would stress me out so bad.
I think I got sick right after it too, just because it's like, I think Steve Martin talks about it in his book. He's like, after just like these huge high pressure things and your body just comes down from it. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you just, you're just vulnerable. And
well, incredible, Adam. That was very, this is fun. And then since then, you've just been like, you go on long tours now and you're fucking killing it. People should follow you. I'll put links in your social media.
I'm posting those reels.
There we go, baby. And go check out Adam Live. Do you have anything else you want to plug?
I don't know how soon this is going up, but literally
it's coming out in 2 days.
That amazing. Next week, I'm filming my next hour special like next week. So come see it if you're in DC. I'm gonna go to Atlanta next week and do some warm up shows. They're on my calendar, and then I'm gonna go film it in a new comedy club called Hotbed in DC. I don't know if you know Sean Joyce from DC.
I do. He's
he
so
does
nice.
Big Hunt and all that stuff. Yeah. So that place goes. He opened a new comedy club in DC. That's like
Big
my
Hunt
favorite
closed?
New. Yeah.
Oh well, so did the DC Improv.
The DC Improv closed.
It might be reopened, but that was like
crazy.
It was like day one of the pandemic, like DC Improv's closed.
Because Sean was running Draft House and that closed, but now he's got this new club that's been open for a week. It's my new favorite club. It's like small. It's like 130 seats, low ceilings, like super punk rock. So we're going to film a special there. And we'll be in Denver after that. So yeah, follow me on stuff.
Awesome. So Atlanta, DC, Denver, go see Adam.
Yeah.
There won't be canceled day of because the Blackhawks won, which also, who the fuck cares? This is a New York City show. That's a Chicago hockey team.
I know. I'm like, I'm getting bumped for hockey.
Yeah.
No, I get it.
Well, Adam, you're the best. I appreciate you coming over and doing it. But I know that you're a big fan of this podcast. You listen to it every week and you're always emailing like no notes. Once again, perfect episode.
Uh-huh.
So you're not at all surprised and you knew that this was coming, that I always have my guests close out the episode.
I did. I knew that. And I'm so happy to be closing it out. And it's been an honor to be here amongst all the great comedians that you've had on here. I have more jobs if you ever want to do a part two, because I had a great time. And I just want to tell everybody out there that you're wonderful. And if you need any
advice, the Blackhawks are coming.
Oh,
in.
I had to.